Thank you, Mr. Barker. Happy Sabbath, everyone. It's great to be here once again. Things are going pretty well over in Indiana. Finally starting to settle down from them having to deal with me and our family, mostly me, but our family too, moving over into Indiana and invading them. Our thoughts and prayers and condolences certainly go out to the McCready family. I know it's very difficult when you're facing the loss of your father. I had to deal with that myself probably 13 years ago or so. So it is tough, and we'll certainly keep the McCradys in our prayers. I know in one instance it's got to be a blessing for his father, because I know life was certainly difficult since the stroke. So, but keep the family in mind and in your prayers, and I know they would appreciate that very much. Seems like there was something else. Oh, also I wanted to say I'm sorry to hear the DeVilbuses aren't feeling well either. I know sickness takes its toll. Jacob, our son, was sick the beginning of this week. He struggled, and it was a really bad time for him to get sick because this was finals week, and right before they went on their big two-week break, so it was kind of tough. He pushed through some of the classes where he probably only felt about 50% of what he would normally feel. So he didn't have a fever, so we went ahead and sent him to school. He did come home when he wasn't in a real important class that he had to be at, but then by Wednesday he was feeling better. So there was a lady in the Indianapolis church that had to go to the hospital. I think it was either Wednesday or Thursday, and when we went and visited her, she said that she went in, I think it was in the morning, and the hospital in this was downtown Indianapolis at Methodist Hospital, and they had so many people there that had come down with the flu that they didn't even have a room to put her in. And her situation was, she didn't have the flu, she was having other problems, but her problems were such that she was having problems with her legs and she couldn't even walk or use her legs, and they couldn't put her in a room. So I think she finally got in a room at about 10:30 that night. So she sat in the emergency room waiting her turn. Well, as Mr. Grady mentioned, we are now just a few days from Christmas. Those that celebrate it would tell you it's a time of joy, a time of peace, a time for goodwill to all men. As we go into the stores and the various businesses around our communities, we'll hear people wishing each other Merry Christmas. Well, let me ask you, do we live in a time of joy? Do we live in a time of peace, a time of goodwill towards all men, towards one another? The stark reality is that we do not. No matter how many times you say joy, peace, goodwill towards men, the reality is there's evil and problems everywhere. Even more so outside of our blessed country, but even in our blessed country, there are a lot of problems and evils that go on every day. The message that travels with Christmas is simply a mask for the reality within our world. It is simply a mask for the reality within our world. The real words that describe our world, and not just at Christmas time, but unfortunately every day throughout the year, are pain, unhappiness, and evil. That is what permeates the world that we live in. The title for my sermon today is, Are We Living in Reality? Are we living in reality? As we get into the sermon, I want to ask you to consider just a few of the headlines. And this is just a few of the headlines that I was able to run across in a very quick search on the internet over the past couple weeks. The most recent being, I think it was yesterday morning I heard it on the news, where they found a mother with chest wounds to herself, but also found 8 children in her home that died from stab wounds. And they're still piecing together the whole puzzle of what took place there, but I think they've actually pinned the blame on the mother. There were eight children, I think, in the home that had died, and seven of them were her own children. Very sad thing to have happen. There's also another headline. It says, accused Seattle campus killer confessed how it was so much fun. This actually took place back in June of this year. And he killed one person, just randomly opened fire on a college campus, killed one person and injured two others. And he confessed to the police that it was just so much fun. He said at first he had the thought of reality, I guess, in a way, saying, I can't believe I'm doing this. But then that quickly vanished and it became fun for him. Recently, an ISIS militant who was held captive by the Kurds admitted, just one man admitted to taking 70 other lives. 70 other lives. There was another story of an innocent little girl whose death is too gruesome for me to even to describe here that I saw on the news. It was horrible. An innocent 8-year-old little girl. If you remember, about a week ago, ISIS made the headlines again, where they walked into a home that was known to be a Christian home. And they came across four teenagers under the age of 15. And they went up to these four teenagers and they said, you denounce Jesus Christ. And they said, no, we love Yeshua. And they cut off the heads of those four children under 15 years old. That's the reality of the world we live in. I also saw a story, and this was on the TV and also on the internet, about a lady who was set on fire, and they found her body next to her car. They actually had a videotape about an hour to an hour and a half before that, where they showed her in a gas station filling up her car. And then they estimated about an hour to an hour and a half after that, they found her out along next to her car on fire. I mean, she was dead. Died from being set on fire. The sad truth is that these are just a few of the many horrific evils that take place every day, every week, every month, and every year in the world that we live in. Man has no answer to stop the endless crimes that take place on humanity every day. These events make the words of God from Paul become even more real. If you would, turn to Romans chapter 8, verse 19. I usually don't get into doing too many sobering sermons that really deal with the harsh realities of our world, but I feel as we head into this time of year that this world celebrates, it's good to reflect on the reality of what is taking place in our world today. Romans chapter 8, verse 19. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. It's saying that this whole world, this creation, eagerly waits for the return of Jesus Christ. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. So he's saying that when you look at the world and the governance of it, which belongs to Satan, and you look at it through your eyes, it looks like there's no hope, that it is futile to hope. But yet, in the end, when you look to God and you have the blessing of the understanding of his truth, there is hope. Verse 21, because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. And that is the hope. That is the hope not just for us as God's people, but it is the hope for this entire world. That someday there will come a day of deliverance from the evils that are part of this world today. Verse 22. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pains together until now. No one's left out. This whole creation, the whole earth, whether you're in God's church or whether you're not, we all groan and suffer together in this world. We're all in the same boat, so to speak. We all, the world and God's first fruits, suffer together. Notice what it says in verse 23. Not only that, but we also who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption of the redemption of our bodies. Do we feel it? Do we see the world for what it is? The sad state of affairs that it's in? To see the harm and the hurt and the evil that's poured out upon our fellow man every day? Or do we turn away from it? Because sometimes, quite frankly, it is too difficult to watch. When I hear about little children being abused, it's tough. It's tough to sit and read the whole article and to let it touch me as a person. Just being completely honest with you, it is far easier for me to just look away. To look away and to look somewhere else. But is that what we should be doing? Should we ignore the evils that go on in this world? I don't think so. I think God and Jesus Christ want us to be touched to the depth of our heart by the evils that take place in this world every day. Yes, we all suffer together. We're all in the same boat, so to speak, together in the sufferings. But there is one big difference. And that is that God has given us, His people, the answer to the question, why? We have the answer to the question, why these things take place? Why is there so much hurtful feelings between families? Why is there so much evil poured out upon mankind every day? Despicable, horrible evils. We have the blessing of understanding why. We know why there's evil, and we understand the hope of God's plan. When you see the world suffer at the hand of evil, what do you think? Do you take it to heart, or do we just turn away? Do we ignore the headlines and avoid the pain? Too often that's what I have done. And that's not good. Are we callous towards the evil in this world and the hurt of so many people? You see, it's just a natural reaction. When you see evil every day, you become very callous towards it. You no longer allow it to affect you as a person. You build up a callousness and you don't take it before God the Father because as soon as you see it, you've developed a habit of turning off to it, of ignoring it, and looking somewhere else. As we go through the sermon today, I want to cover a few real-life stories that poignantly paint the dark side of our world today and the suffering of the people within it. We'll see that even though this world doesn't understand the complete plan of God, there is still a powerful and real hope for each and every one of us and this world. I have 2 points as we go through the sermon today. The first one is, open your heart to this world. Open your heart to this world. What do I mean by that statement? It means to allow your heart to be filled with compassion towards this world that suffers every day at the hand of Satan. Every day at the hand of Satan, this world suffers. Our Father's heart is wide open to this world. He does not hate mankind. We are His creation. He hates the evil that goes on every day in this world. He can't wait to send His Son, Jesus Christ, back to put an end to it all. But it all has to happen at the right time. according to God's schedule. Let's go to John chapter 3. And we'll begin reading in verse 12. John chapter 3. Beginning in verse 12. This is a powerful message, not just to God's people. Most of God's word, the Bible, is meant for His people. And this verse is as well. But this verse specifically addresses all of His creation, all of mankind. Verse 12 says, "If I have told you earthly things and you do not believe, how will you believe if I tell you heavenly things? No one has ascended to heaven but He who came down from heaven. That is the Son of Man who is in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up." And verse 15 gives a very important point in Christ's explanation. It says that whosoever believes in Him, and that word "believes" in the Greek means to completely put all of your trust in Jesus Christ. 100% of your trust must go into Jesus Christ. Complete faith in Him and who He was for you and who He is for this entire world. That whoever believes in Him should not perish, but have eternal life. And belief is just not a casual expression or a casual thought. If you truly believe that Jesus Christ is your Savior, you will change your life and the direction it's heading. It's not an emotional 5-minute exclamation that you have faith in Jesus Christ. It is a life-changing experience. Verse 16, "For God so loved the world." That's how much the world touches our Father's heart. It says, "He so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever completely changes his life and completely trusts in Jesus Christ, in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God did not send His Son into the world to condemn the world." Jesus Christ didn't come here to condemn the world, "but that the world through Him might be saved." Those 5 or 6 verses there completely describes the compassion and the love and the feeling that the Father has for this world. He's given His all. He's given His everything for this world. His very own, one and only Son, Jesus Christ. I was looking on the internet about a week ago, and I came across a blog site, and I found a message on this site from a lady with the name of Ms. Morgan, and she posted this short little blog on there, and it was actually at a website called www.sunnyskies.com, and the skies has a Z on the end, sunnyskies.com. And the title of her short little blog here is Midlife Crisis. I think she's probably hinting towards her age, I'm guessing. But it's titled Midlife Crisis. Listen to what she says. She posts on this, and this was posted on December 5th of this year. "Did you ever wish you could hear God's voice like Samuel did when he was under the tutelage of Eli?" She goes on and says, "I sure have. I have so many questions about life. What is my purpose here? Who am I to become? Am I on the right path to happiness? Recently, I've also been questioning where I am in my life right now. Being a prisoner of my thoughts, meaning that she has all these questions and she can't find the answers to them. She can't find the reason why. And she is crying out on this random blog site. Being a prisoner of my own thoughts, I often find myself locked up behind bars of emotional turmoil and disappointment. And isn't that the way too many in the world go about it? Because they don't have the answers to why, yet that doesn't mean that they're not searching. They look and they try to find, why am I here? What is my purpose? Isn't there something worthwhile beyond this? What's the answer to all the evils in the news? And these things go through their minds constantly, and yet it's just an emotional, she's just an emotional prisoner in her thoughts. She goes on and she says, I just thought I would have accomplished a lot more at this age. So she just is making a statement of how really life just doesn't have a whole lot of meaning in the grand scheme of things. One day in my mind, I solemnly said, God, what? Am I supposed to be worried? So she even realizes that her feelings and her emotions are in conflict to the words of the Bible. Because God tells all of us not to fear, not to be worried. But yet she doesn't have the answers to connect the dots. She's just one example of too many in this world that suffer from these same questions that they don't have answers to. Mrs. Morgan clearly believes in God, but she doesn't have the answers. This world needs our prayers. Someday Mrs. Morgan will understand. She'll have the answers to the why questions. But this world needs our prayers now. It needs prayers of mercy for them. Mercy for them and their ignorance, because Satan has blinded their minds to understanding the abuses from the evils in this world. They don't understand why they take place, how people can be so completely evil. We, just as the world, have one common enemy who pours out his evil upon us daily, and that is Satan. This world is not our enemy. Satan is our enemy. This time of the year, it would be easy to develop a mindset of us just not being able to stand or to deal with the people in this world. But that's not a right focus as we go about our daily routine during this time of the year. We should not hate the world. We should not have bad feelings towards the world. They're living in ignorance of truth. And they suffer every day from the realities of the evil that's in this world. Our hearts should be filled with compassion upon those that desire to see, but they just simply can't. Mrs. Morgan has a desire to see. That's why that was her motivation for going to a blog site and posting it. But she just simply can't. Let's go to Matthew chapter 13, verse 13. Matthew 13, verse 13, we'll read down through verse 17. Jesus said, therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And this world sees, they hear, when they go to church, they preach from the same Bible that we do, but they don't have the understanding. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, hearing you will hear and you shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of the people have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed. Lest they should see with their eyes, hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them. A very important phrase. Notice what Jesus Christ said, so that I should heal them. What has taken place for you and for me that makes us different from this world is God the Father, through His Son Jesus Christ, has healed us. Don't forget that statement from Jesus Christ, that we have received a healing by Him. Verse 16, but blessed are your eyes, for they see. Yes, we truly are blessed. And your ears, for they hear. For surely I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desire to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. We cannot afford to take our blessing, our healing, for granted. We need to appreciate it from the depths of our heart and give God thanks for it on a regular basis. The second point for my sermon today is recognize your callousness. Recognize your callousness. I'll spell that for you. It's C-A-L-L-O-U-S-N-E-S-S. Recognize your callousness. And maybe you think, well, I'm not callous to this world's problems. And if you think that, and if somebody probably would have asked me before I put this sermon together, I probably would have said, well, I don't think I'm callous to this world's problems. I can see what they go through every day. It's in the news. It's pretty obvious. But I think our callousness comes to when we ask ourselves, how does it affect me? Or is it affecting me? Let's go to Psalms chapter 69, verse 1. The book of Psalms has always been an interesting book for me. It's really very unique when you compare it to the other books of the Bible. Specifically, I'm speaking of the way Psalms were written. Psalms chapter 69, verse 1. I'll be there in a second. I was only 69 chapters away. So this will be a little test. Psalm 69, verse 1. Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in deep mire. Where there is no standing, I have come into deep waters, where the floods overflow me. Okay, just let those words kind of sink in and think about those words. Think about the descriptiveness of those words. And now let's go over to Psalms 102. We'll read verses 3 through 9. Psalm 102, beginning in verse 3. And again, as we go through this, think about what the psalmist says here. For my days are consumed like smoke, and my bones are burned like a hearth. My heart is stricken and withered like grass, so that I forget to eat my bread. Because of the sound of my groaning, my bones cling to my skin. I am like a pelican of the wilderness. I am like an owl of the desert. I lie awake, and I'm like a sparrow alone on the housetop. My enemies reproach me all day long. Those who deride me swear an oath against me. For I have eaten ashes like bread and mingled my drink with weeping. What he's saying there is that he's crying so much that the tears just fill his cup that he's drinking. So we read these two verses, and there could be all kind of other verses that we could read that are very similar to these. A lot of the Psalms are very graphic depictions of the sorrow and the mourning and the lament of the psalmist. Can you relate to this psalmist's lament? I can't. I can't sit there and say, oh, I know what he's talking about when he says his bones are burning like fire. I know what he's talking about when it says when I'm eating ashes. I can't relate to that much sorrow. I don't think I've ever had anything in my life happen to me to where I can say, okay, if I had to write down a descriptive phrase describing what I'm going through, that's the way I would put it. You see, the psalmist allowed the grief that was around him to touch him to an incredible depth of his heart. He was not callous to the evil and the wrong things that were going on around him in his life. He opened up his mind and his heart, and he took it in to the depth of his being. And then I think when you really understand the Psalms, it goes beyond just opening up and allowing the grief and the sorrow that's around you, like for instance in this world, some of the things we've already touched on, opening up and letting that come into your heart and affect you as a person, so that then you fall down on your knees before God and put it back to Him on His throne. Which is what the psalmists do. When you really study into the Psalms, they are men that poured themselves out in descriptive phrase about their grief because they've been touched to their core of the evil and the things that were going on around them, but they didn't just leave it there inside them, bottled up. They took it before God Himself and His throne. And they poured it back out, and that's what we should be doing as a people living in this world, going before God when you see these little children being abused and say, Father, I can't stand what's taking place. It hurts me to the depth of my core and my being. We need your Son, Jesus Christ. We need the hope that your word offers us and the promises of your word. You see, you take in the grief and the sorrow around you, you pour it back out to God, to His throne, who can give you relief from that, and then you fill that void with the hope of God's coming kingdom. That's the cycle that should be happening. We should not be callous to the evils in this world. We need to let them come in to affect our life, to affect our relationship with God, to where we fall down on our knees and give it back to Him. And then at the same time, we should not walk away from our relationship with God feeling hopeless, but just the contrary, have a renewed hope and a renewed understanding of how much we need Jesus Christ's return to this earth. If we are callous, and I'd say we probably all are to some degree, we need to work on removing that callousness of the evils in this world. I'm currently reading a book. It's called Deeper Places. And I'm not a big book reader. My son Kyle is a big book reader. But I'm not a big book reader. This is written by Matthew Jacoby. He is a minister. He's also in the band Sons of Korah. And their band focuses on, and I'm not a big follower of the group, but from what I understand, their band focuses on all of their songs that they produce are bent and built around the Psalms, the book of Psalms in the Bible. But he has a very unique perspective on the book of Psalms. I want to read a little bit from his book here, and this is picking up his comments right after reading what we just did in Psalms 102. It says, these expressions of grief and pain, and the many others like them in the book of Psalms, are not self-indulgent wallowing in misery. The full expressions of grief is vital for moving out of grief. Grief must be exhausted in order to be alleviated. The use of metaphor is common throughout the Psalms, and not least in the Lament Psalms, where it is a vital part of the catharsis of grieving. The lamenting psalms use the imaginary of drowning, of being surrounded by beasts, of being emptied like a jar, of melting like wax, and of burning like embers to describe how they feel. They are a healing effect in expression. The grief of the psalmist was expressed like this is not primarily for the benefit of someone else, but for the exhaustion of grief itself. And yet there is indeed great benefit for all of us in all of these expressions. The Lament Psalms provide an empathetic touchstone for those who suffer in the same way. They not only give us permission to grieve, but also encourage us to express our grief fully before God. As we do this, we can begin to appropriate the compassion of the God who is no stranger to suffering. In this way, the psalmists show us how to suffer. They call us to cry on God's shoulder and exhaust our grief in the presence of the most empathetic listener in the universe. It's really a unique book from the standpoint of helping a person understand the whole point of the book of Psalms. And the book of Psalms has a powerful meaning for all of mankind, but especially for God's people. Because we have the answers to why. We can see the evil, we can understand what is being expressed in Psalms, and we can understand and have access to our Father in heaven. And we understand the hope that is promised upon this world as well. We should feel the pain of others when we see it, just as Jesus Christ did, and He still does. Turn with me, if you would, to Mark chapter 1, verse 40. It's a very interesting statement here as Jesus Christ was walking through the towns and villages that He visited. Mark chapter 1, verse 40. It says, "Now a leper came to Him," of course speaking of Jesus Christ, "imploring Him," or begging Jesus Christ, "kneeling down to Him and saying to Him," notice this question, "if you are willing," he said that to Jesus Christ, "if you are willing, you can make me clean." And even more importantly, notice what Jesus Christ said. Then Jesus, moved with compassion — this probably wasn't even a person that was a part, we don't know anything about his culture, we don't know if he was considered a Christian, a follower of Jesus Christ. He obviously was believing the many multitude of miracles that Jesus Christ was displaying and giving to many people. But then Jesus, moved with compassion, stretched out His hand and touched him and said to him, "I am willing, be cleansed." Jesus Christ told this man who asked, "Are you willing? Is it your will to heal me?" And He looked at that man filled with compassion and He said, "I am willing." We need to make sure we understand and know and recognize the compassion that Jesus Christ has had and has for this world. He is full of compassion for this world and for us. Let's go to John chapter 9. John chapter 9, we'll begin reading in verse 1. As we read this, I would ask you to remember the scriptures that we looked at earlier, where it talks about how we have been given the opportunity to see with our eyes, to hear with our ears, and to have an understanding. And especially the phrase where Jesus Christ said, "or else I would heal them." That was an important point as we continue to move through the rest of the sermon. John chapter 9, verse 1. Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So they automatically looked at him, saw his affliction since birth, and they automatically thought, really they're casting judgment upon him. They said, where's the sin? Is it upon him or is it upon his parents? Who's paying for this? And Jesus answered, neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. What an incredible statement. Jesus Christ is saying, there's not sin involved here. This is to display the works of God. What are the works of God? If this is an example of showing what our Father in heaven is all about, what are the works of God? But that the works of God should be revealed in him. Jesus Christ then says, I must work the works of him. What did Jesus Christ do throughout his ministry as he walked this earth? He healed. He healed, he healed, he healed again. There are others, there's one scripture in the Bible, we won't turn to it for the sake of time, but it said that if you were to record everything that Jesus Christ did, it would be an endless book. Too many things to record. We just have a sampling of the healings and the things that Jesus Christ did on this earth. And he said that while he's on this earth, he must do his Father's work. Our Father in heaven and Jesus Christ are all about healing. It is who they are to their core. They are filled with compassion in their hearts for us, for all of the people in this world. Verse 4, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. While it is day. That's a description of a period of time. Jesus Christ is saying, it is day. I must do the work while it is day. Why was it day? It was day because Jesus Christ walked the earth. When Jesus Christ is a part of this earth, a part of this world, healing comes. When Jesus Christ left this work, this earth, it is no longer day. It is night. This world lives in a state of darkness. This world does not suffer. It suffers from the hand of Satan. It does not enjoy the healing touch of the Father in heaven. But they will. They will when Jesus Christ comes back and restores the day to this earth in the future. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. And the night came when Jesus Christ went back to his Father in heaven and turned this world back over to Satan who rules it today. As long as I am in the world, he even gives a description and defines this for us. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. He's saying as long as I am in the world, it is daytime and healing has come to this earth. It was just a sample healing. He was just giving us a hint of what is to come in a much greater grand scale in the future when he returns to establish his Father's government on this earth. And again, then light will return to this earth. We in this world live in a state of nighttime, a state of complete darkness. And except for very few places where God intervenes and allows healing to take place, it doesn't happen in this world and in this life today, spiritually or physically. And this world needs both. But Jesus Christ said, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Or he's saying it is daytime. But God is not with the world today. And as I mentioned, we are in a state of darkness, exceedingly dark, because it is governed and ruled by Satan. About a week ago, I was sitting at home and I got a call from a lady who has only attended a couple services with United Church of God. She has a little bit of understanding of God's truth. She's just now coming into understanding it. And I had a conversation with her that went on for over an hour. And she was actually desperate to speak to a minister, and she tried to call someone in her area. This lady is from another state, neither from Ohio nor Indiana. And I sat and talked with her, and she left a message on my phone, and I called her back as soon as I got home. And the first thing she said to me, I told her who I was, and she said, "Oh, thank you for calling me back." She said, "Life is so difficult right now with Christmas." She said that she struggles greatly. And then she went on to tell me about all the troubles and the problems that have inflicted her over the past number of years. She didn't get specific, but I could tell from her descriptions that she's been through a lot. Her husband has been unfaithful to her, and they divorced some time ago. Her children, her one son in particular, I don't know how many she has, but one son that she was talking about pretty much has disowned her, and she doesn't understand why. And she tries to maintain a relationship with him, and she can't. And she talked to me for over an hour of the difficulties and the frustration and the literal grief that she was experiencing day in and day out, and had no understanding of how to resolve it or the reason why it was there. Why she was so alone in this world. And she was hurting deeply. And I talked with her, and we talked about where she can meet for services with other people in like mind, because I told her that would help her this time of the year, because she knows that we don't celebrate Christmas. And we talked a lot about God's Word and God's plan. And I shared some of these things with her from today's sermon. But she was having a very, very difficult time in life. There's very little things, I think, that she really enjoyed with life. She was having a rough way to go. And she's just a sample of what too many people in this world deal with on a regular basis. Relationships are destroyed in this world. They're just ripped to and fro. And it's unfortunate and wasn't supposed to be that way. Also, I wanted to read to you from another news headline. This was an article that was produced by the BBC News magazine. And it's an article dated December 10th. It has to do with the fight against Ebola over in Africa, mostly over in Africa. The article starts off and says, "Health workers fighting Ebola have been named as Times Person of the Year." So it's not just one person, but it's all the health workers over there that are fighting against Ebola. And to give you an idea, I don't know if you're familiar with the stats of how many people have lost their lives just this year from Ebola, but there's three countries that is primarily affecting over in Africa, and the deaths were well over 6,000 just this year in these three countries. And I've seen pictures online where there were people just literally laying in the streets because they were so sick. And the population there knows how extremely contagious it is, so people won't even go near them. I mean, people are just craving for help and strength, and people are walking by them in the streets. But I want to go through the article here. This article is the view of one of the healthcare workers over there in Africa and what he has had to deal with. It says, it's actually entitled, "My Fight Against an Invisible Enemy." Health workers fighting Ebola have been named as Times Person of the Year. And one face splashed on covers of the magazine is that of an ambulance driver, Fode Gala, in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Here he tells the BBC of his determination to battle a disease which almost killed him. He says, "In August, I went to pick up a little 4-year-old boy up from his home. I knew the place well. I had already taken 7 members of his family who all eventually died. He was the last one. I hadn't taken him before because he had showed no symptoms, but I had asked the neighbors to keep an eye on him and to call me back if he got sick. On the afternoon of the morning, I took his father and grandmother and brothers. I got the call. I drove straight to his home, and I saw the boy lying in a pool of vomit. I picked him up, and I was carrying him in my arms to the ambulance when he vomited again onto my chest. As it turned out, my protective suit was not completely sealed, but in that moment, I was very focused on what I was doing, getting him to the Medicines Sans Frontières, a treatment center, as quickly as possible. The following Saturday, I went down with a fever. I gave myself some medication, but the fever wouldn't break. I told my family to stay away from me, and the following day, I went to a treatment center to be tested. I had known I would eventually get it. A lot of great doctors and nurses on the front lines have died. They tried to be careful, but Ebola still got them all. I had carried so many patients in my ambulance and seen so many die in my arms. I was frightened, but I prayed. And God didn't allow my fears to take over. You don't want to know what Ebola feels like. If you're not psychologically strong and God is not on your side, you will drop before you are taken for treatment because the pain is too great. You have no appetite. Nothing stays in your system. You vomit a lot. You are dehydrated. And then comes diarrhea. It's bad, terrible, devastating. It makes you want to give up on life. All I wanted was to be looked at, cared for, shown love. And I was shown a lot of love and concern and care by the doctors and nurses who treated me. I was there for 2 weeks. In the same tent as me in the treatment center, a 2-month-old baby died from the disease. And I lay listening to a lady who cried until she died. But the little boy who had infected me was there too, and he survived. I don't know why I survived. Maybe it was because of my faith in God, or maybe just because I went for treatment promptly. And thank God my family did not stigmatize me. They were scared, my mother and my brother, but they never turned their backs on me, and that was the same with my boss, Honorable Joseph. They all built me up and gave me courage. I want people to know that Ebola is not necessarily a death sentence, and you can survive it. I went back to my job, part-time, at the beginning of December. I have some immunity to the disease now, but I still wear protective clothes. I was always kind to my patients, but my experience made me double my efforts with them. So now I talk to them when they are in the ambulance. To keep their hopes alive, I tell them, look, you are not going to die. You are going to get to the treatment center. Remember to listen to the doctors there. Take their advice. Take your medication. You're going to be okay. And you're going to go back to your family. In February, before the Ebola virus, our job involved going to communities to pick up pregnant women, accident victims, and patients with hypertension. Now, ambulance crews are working 24 hours a day. When people are dying, you need to be all over the city. It's hectic. Our workload has tripled, and we don't have enough ambulances in Monrovia to deal with the disease. Recently, I transported 11 people from the Omega area, and they all died. Sometimes I feel so sad when I'm looking at someone and I know he or she is dying. Sometimes I just want to give up. You know, when you're faced with that every day of your life, in some cases 24 hours a day of your life, you're not callous to the hurts of this world. He goes on and says, most of my friends now stay away from me because of my job. Some of them talk to me on the phone, but they won't see me in person. Many of the patients I pick up are very afraid. Some of them just cry. They cry because of the pain, but also because their families have deserted them. I remember a 70-year-old lady. When we got to her house, she was all alone in this 4-bedroom apartment. The children are gone. Her husband is gone. all of her family members gone, and she was alone and shivering. I could see death in her eyes. My colleague and I picked her up and took her to the ambulance. We nearly died of suffocation that day in our protective suits. That's just one example, a graphic example, but one example of the pain and the suffering that is going on in this world because of the curse of Satan's government on this earth. It is difficult, and it's not easy. We all have a big battle that we all face until Jesus Christ returns. The title of my sermon is, Are We Living in Reality? This world is not living in reality, not with their celebration of Christmas. What is real about the Christmas season? Is there joy? Is there peace? Is there goodwill to men? Not true, real joy and peace that is promised to come upon this world. What is real about the few headlines that we have looked at today? Everything is real about those headlines. Do we feel the reality? God the Father does. Jesus Christ feels the reality. He did when he walked this earth, and he did his healings, which are the work of his Father. Jesus Christ had compassion even to his last breath as he was about to be crucified. And he looked down upon those that were putting him to death, and he asked for his Father to forgive them for their sins because they didn't know what they were doing. Jesus Christ was filled with compassion to when he was having all of the evil of this world poured upon him. There's coming a day when the light will be with us again. This time, the light will stay, and it will be a time of great healing, a time of real joy, a time of real peace, a time where goodwill will literally be poured upon each person every day. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 33, verse 6. Jeremiah chapter 33, verse 6. It says, Behold, I will bring it health and healing. It's a promise for the future. Health and healing will come. Going on in verse 6, I will heal them and reveal to them the abundance of peace and the abundance of truth. We do not live in a time of truth. Going on in verse 8, it says, I will cleanse them from all of their iniquity by which they have sinned against me. And I will pardon all of their iniquities by which they have sinned and by which they have transgressed against me. And down in verse 14, Behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, that I will perform that good thing which I have promised to the house of Israel and to the house of Judah. There's an assurance there in God's own words that there's a day coming that he will fulfill his promises to this earth, to you and I, to all of mankind. But that time is not yet upon us. Now is the time for us to live in reality. A time to feel the pain, a time to open our hearts and to also fill our hearts with compassion, to go before God the Father and ask for mercy for this world and also ask for the soon coming return of his Jesus Christ and for the healing that will come with him. So open your hearts. Let in the pain and the suffering. Feel it to the depths of your being and then pour them back out to our Father in heaven, on your knees. And then open your hearts back up to the reality of the hope and the promises of healing that are going to come in the future. That hope and the assurance that one day it will be over once and for all. Hope you enjoy the rest of your Sabbath day.